Okay, this week's Parshas, Parshas Devarim, page 938. Eva HaDevarim, these are the words, Asher Dibra Moshe al Kol Yisrael, that Moshe spoke to all of Israel, Be'eva HaYarden, on the other side of the Jordan, by Midbar in the desert, by Arava in the plain, Mol Suf, opposite the Yam Suf, between Paran and Tophel, between Paran and Tophel, Vavan v'chatzayros v'di Yizahav, all the names of the different cities. Acharas hayom echayrev, 11 days from Chayrev, Derech Arseir, by way of Mount Seir, Ad Kadesh Barnea until Kadesh Barnea. Vahi ba'arim shana ba'ashtei asar chaydesh b'chad l'chaydesh. That was in the 40th year, the 11th month, on the first day of that month. Dibar Moshe el b'nei Yisrael. Moshe spoke to b'nei Yisrael. K'chol ha'shetziva Hashem oisei alayhem, like all that Hashem had commanded him unto them. So I want to share with you a thought from the Ksav Sefer. The Ksav Sefer brings down a medrash on these words that we just read. Dibar Moshe b'nei Yisrael, Moshe spoke to the Jewish people, like all that Hashem had commanded him unto them. So the medrash says like this. The medrash says, K'shehizcho Moshe el ha-devarim, when Moshe began this book of Devarim, Amru Yisrael b'Mitzrayim Amarta Kvad Per Kvad Lashon Anoichi V'achshav Eta Medaber Kol Kach. The Jewish people said to Moshe, in Egypt you called yourself a person who was Kvad Per. You had a hard time speaking, you had a stutter, whatever it was. You had a hard time speaking. And now, you're speaking without a stop. That's what the Medrash says that the Jewish people said to Moshe. In Mitzrayim, you're saying, I can barely talk. And here, you're going strong. What happened? So the Ksav Sefer asks, why now, after 40 years, are the Jewish people asking this question? I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to them in between. So is Moshe Rabbeinu having difficulty speaking all those 40 years until now? And if until now he was speaking fine, which the assumption is he was, so why all of a sudden now? Are they waking up and wondering? In Egypt, you said you couldn't speak, and now you're speaking so well. Why now did they wake up with it? So the answer that the Ksav Sefer gives is based on a big discussion in the commentaries about the difference between the Book of Devarim and the rest of the Torah where Moshe Rabbeinu appears. And that is that based on a Gemara, the Gemara is in Megillah, I believe. The Gemara, without getting to the whole Gemara, the Gemara says that the klolos, the curses that are mentioned at the end of Devarim, Moshe Amran, Moshe said them. And there's a whole question what it means Moshe said them. It would seem from the Gemara, and there are some commentaries that seem to take it pretty literally, is that Devarim are Moshe's words. Moshe made up Devarim. It's Moshe's words. Everything else are words of prophecy, and these are Moshe's words. Many of the Farshim say, can't be. Can't be that there's a word in Torah that's not coming from Hashem. And therefore, there are those who explain it in different ways. Some explain that it means that the concept, there's a principle that we have by Moshe, Shechina medaberes mitachronu shel Moshe. The divine presence spoke from the throat of Moshe. So some say that until Devarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu speaks, it's the Shechina speaking. Devarim works like any other prophecy. Hashem sends a prophecy to the prophet, and the prophet then relates the prophecy. So it's not Moshe Rabbeinu making up the book of Devarim. Of course it comes from Hashem. Moshe is saying over the words of prophecy. But he's saying it over like a regular prophecy. Not in the same way that until now when Moshe Rabbeinu speaks, it's Shechina Medaberes, it's Hashem speaking through Moshe. And others say that even Devarim still has the principle of Shechina Medaberes, that the Shechina is speaking from Moshe's mouth. But in some way, Moshe has more input at some level in Devarim than everywhere else. Okay. So therefore, the Ksav Sefer says like this, that until now, when Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking, let's work with the approach, Hashem Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking with the Shechina speaking through him. Okay, so then Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking fine. But when now Moshe Rabbeinu already is at a point where he's kind of on his own, or he's more on his own, so it's not because of the Shekhinah that he's speaking on his own. So the Bnei Yisrael said, Moshe Rabbeinu, before you hit that level, when you were in Egypt, you were saying that, you know, I can barely speak. Now you're back to that. And all of a sudden, now you're speaking fine. So this is just one point that I wanted to bring out here, because it's going to possibly, depending on where we get to tonight, it's going to come up again. But this does relate to a very important principle that is discussed amongst many of the Mefarshim here at the beginning of Devarim, as to the difference that the difference between the book of Devarim and the rest of the Torah. Now let's read on.
Rabbi.
Oh, wait a second. So I just want to now tell you, if I want to fit into the words of the pasuk. So now it says Kesam Sefer, when the pasuk says Diber Moshe al Bnei Yisrael, Moshe spoke to the Jewish people like all that Hashem commanded him unto them, means that now Moshe spoke to the Jewish people, like everything that Moshe said when he was commanded to say it. Just like when he was commanded to say, Moshe Rabbeinu spoke without any kind of difficulty. Now, although he was more on his own, Moshe Rabbeinu still spoke these words as all the words he had spoken until now, in a clear way, because of Shekhinah Medaberes, that the Shekhinah was speaking through him.
The quite, like you say, these people said you couldn't speak in Mitzrayim. Is that something they heard from their parents? Because most of these people weren't in Mitzrayim at the 40th year.
I guess so. That's an interesting point.
People,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Okay. Let's read on. Pasuk Dalet. Acharei Kaisei Esichad Melech Amori. After he smote Sichon the king of the Amori, Sheshe Becheshbein, that lived in Cheshbein, the eighth Oig Melech Habashan, and Oig the king of Bashan, Asher Yishev Ashtarayt Bedrei, who lived in Ashtarayt in Edrei. Be'eva Hayar de Meretz Moav. On the other side of the Jordan, in the land of Moab, Hayol Moshe Be'eretz HaTorah HaZayis Leimar, Moshe began to explain the Torah, saying. So Rashi here, on the words Be'eretz HaTorah, which is Rashi in Pasuk Hei, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines from the bottom, Be'eretz HaTorah, in the right column, when the Pasuk says that Moshe explained the Torah, the Shivim Lashon Pirshalahem. Moshe interpreted the Torah in 70 languages. Famous Rashi. Now the question is, why did he need to do that? Why did Moshe need to explain the Torah in 70 languages? So again, I'm going to share with you the explanation of the Ksav Sefer. The Ksav Sefer explains, and I believe that he was probably coming from the point that he and his Ksav Sefer was the son of the Ksav Sefer. Yeah. The Chassam Sefer had to lead a battle against the reform movement in Hungary. And the Chassam Sefer says that Moshe Rabbeinu interpreted the Torah in 70 languages so that no one should say that the Torah is only relevant or is only needed when the Jewish people are on their own. They're in the desert, they're on their own, they're in Israel, in their own land. That is where the laws of the Torah apply. But if they come to a point of living amongst other nations of the world, so they need to assimilate and follow the laws of the land that they're in. In order to make it clear to the Jewish people, never to think that the Torah is only relevant in Eretz Yisrael, in the desert, when they're on their own, and to think, well, when they land up in a different country, they just adopt the laws of that country. Moshe Rabbeinu explained the Torah in 70 languages to say that wherever you are, the Torah is relevant. The Torah needs to be kept wherever you are. This was Moshe Rabbeinu's lesson to the Jewish people as they entered Eretz Yisrael. Don't make that mistake. Don't ever make that mistake to think that the Torah is only when you're in Eretz Yisrael, but that once you land up going amongst other peoples, you assimilate and follow their laws. And the point was, why did Moshe Rabbeinu teach the Torah 70 languages? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, the Torah, no matter where you go and where you land up and what language you may land speaking, the Torah always has to go with you wherever you are. Okay. Let's now continue. Let's skip down to Pasuk Tes, three lines from the bottom. And I said to you at that time, I cannot carry you alone. Hashem Elokeichem Hibah Eschem, Hashem your God has multiplied you, V'nechem Hayoim, and behold you are today, K'choich V'yashvam L'roi, like the stars of the heaven in abundance. Hashem Elokei Avoseichem, Yosef Aleichem K'chem Elofa'amim, Hashem the God of your fathers shall add on to you like you are 1,000 times more. V'vareich Hashem K'ashadib Elokeichem, He shall bless you as He has spoken to you. Eicha Esel Levadi, how can I carry on my own? Tarchachem umasachem berivchem. Your tarchachem, your contentiousness, your burdens, and your quarrels. Havu lachem anashim chachamim unavainim viduim l'shifteichem. Bring forth from you men that are wise, understanding, and known amongst your tribes. Vasimim berashaychem, and I shall place them at your heads. This is where Moshe is repeating the what took place in Parashas Yisrei, where instead of Moshe Rabbeinu being the one judge of the Jewish people, that he now created a court system. And Moshe Rabbeinu prefaces his words by saying, "Eicha Lavadi, how can I carry on my own tarchachem, your contentiousness, your burdens, and your quarrels? And there I can't handle it. Therefore, I need help." Now, the custom is that when we read this pasuk, we switch from the regular trup cantillation of Shabbos, and we go into the trup of the book of Eicha that we read on Tisha B'Av. And the reason we do so is because there is a medrash that says that there are three people who prophesied with the word Eicha. Moshe said Eicha, Yeshaya said Eicha, Yirmiyah said Eicha. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Eicha, how can I carry your load? Yeshaya says, Eicha lezayna kiryat emana, how did Yerushalayim, the trustworthy city, become like a prostitute? And Yirmiyahu said, Eicha yashva badad, how does now the city sit desolate? The Medrash clearly is stating there's some kind of connection between the three of them. And that when we go ahead and when we read Eicha, this pasuk with the trup of Eicha, Moshe Rabbeinu was actually already prophesizing and bemoaning the root of what eventually would sprout in Yerushalayim being destroyed. Moshe Rabbeinu is Eicha Salavadi, how can I carry on my own? Moshe Rabbeinu is already bemoaning in prophecy the eventual Eichas that would come. And the question is, what's the connection? What is the connection between the Eicha here, by where Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't carry the load, and he creates a court system, and the eventual downfall of Yerushalayim? And I'm going to share with you a very interesting explanation given from the Parsh perspective. It comes from the base of out in Lakewood. That's actually a base in Lakewood. They give out this weekly Dvar Torah. And the person who wrote this, right, Tzvi Price, gives a very interesting explanation. We have to first start with Rashi. Rashi on the Pasuk, on this Pasuk Yud Beis, Rashi Parchachem. And this is 6 lines from the top, Parchachem, which means your contentiousness. Melame Shor Yisrael Parchanim. This teaches that the Jewish people were tarchanim, contentious, bringing a lot of problems, making things difficult. If a person would come to a court case and he would see that his friend seems to be getting the upper hand, he starts using whatever he can. I have edim to bring. I have proofs. I'm going to add the judges. I'm not sure what that means. But basically, Tarachachem means Moshe Rabbeinu is complaining about the Jewish people. Why do I need more help? Because there's a couple of things about you. One thing about you is Tarachachem. You're contentious. You fight a lot. You come to a Bezdin, and in the Bezdin, when you see that you're losing, you just keep going and dragging on and dragging on and dragging on. Okay. So, what exactly is the problem here? I mean, you're not going to say there's something wrong with going to a basin, right? You're supposed to go to a basin. Yeah. The problem is, though, as Rashi says, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to the Jewish people, but look at the way that you behave in the basin. You don't give up. You just don't give up. You're never ready to give up to lose. You're always just basically trying the best to win. And what that really means is that there was this character trait by the Jewish people of when they have a dispute with someone, they're just never going to give in. They're never going to give in. They're going to keep on fighting and fighting for what they think is right. And in essence, there is a concept that we have the letter of the law, we have din, we have strict judgment, we have the letter of the law, and then we have something called lifting mishurethin, and going beyond the letter of the law. And when you're going to be too caught up on following only the letter of the law, then that creates a situation where it's all about winning. It's all about winning. It's never about compromising. It's never about giving in. It's all about winning. And in essence, the concept of being listening to Shira Sadin, going beyond the letter of the law, actually is something that teaches us, no, you don't have to always say what's mine is mine and just stand up for what's right. Sometimes it's more important to make shalom, to make peace, and to work things out. As a matter of fact, it's brought down, according to some opinions in Shulchan Aruch, that when two people come in front of a Beis Din for a court case, the Dayanim actually should suggest and promote what's called pshara, compromise. They should work on that. It's not like, you know, they come into Beis Din and we just deal with the law, right? We're going to deal with the law. Actually, the judges should promote compromise. That's what they should try to do. And this doesn't mean that, you know, every time a person, you know, every time a person goes to Beis Din, that, you know, he should just give in. I mean, there are times a person has to stand up for what's right. But at the same time, a person can also see Beis Din as a unbiased mediator. Many times you come into a Beis Din, if you allow the Beis Din to work out a pshara, to work out mediation, the Beis Din actually helps each side see the other one's side, where the other one is coming from, and actually helps them make a compromise and work out things peacefully instead of contentiously. But if a person goes into Beis Din, and their whole point of the Beis Din is just to keep going and going and going and going and never compromising, that leads to sinas chinam. That's a trait in which everyone is saying, I want mine, and I want to win, and I want to be on top. And that's sinas chinam. When Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, Eicha, how can I carry your contentiousness? How can I carry you when you always, when in the Beis Din you just never give up and you never want to lose and you just keep going and going and going? That's the root of sinas chinam. That was the root of the hatred that eventually came out, and it was the cause of destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Even when Yisroel suggests to Moshe Rabbeinu that there should be a court system, if we look back in Parshas Yisroel, the Gemara tells us something very interesting, that Yisroel wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to convey to the Jewish people, and with the creation of a court system. And let's not forget that the reason that Yisroel suggested to Moshe to make the courts is because he saw Moshe Rabbeinu sits there a whole day and all these people are coming to judgment. So the question is, how to explain that? Is that also part of the fact that there, why are so many people coming to a Beis Din? Why are there so many fights going on? I'm not sure if everybody interprets it like that.
Some people feel by going to the Beis Din, it's sort of, you're not compromising, you should try to compromise before you even get there.
It's possible, but sometimes you need someone to help you with that. Yeah. And then at the same time also, it doesn't mean that every single time you give in. I mean, you know, every case is different. But sometimes it's the Beis Din with their experience and their expertise that actually can help you work this out best. Now, so Yisroel sees Moshe Rabbeinu a whole day is judging the Jewish people, and he tells them that you have to go ahead and create a court system. If you look on page 398, Pasuk Chaf, Vizharta eshem esachukim esatoiris. You shall warn them regarding the laws and the judgments and the teachings. Vaidatam esaderech yalchuba. You will make known to them the path on which they will go. Vesamaase asher yaasun, and the actions that they shall take. So these two phrases, you should let them know the path to go on and the action that they should do. So the Gemara Baba Kama says that the first statement, and you should let them know the path they will go on, zudin. This is judgment. This is the law. That's a maaser shayasun, and the action that they should, and the behavior and the action that they should do, zu lifnim mishuras hadin. This is referring to going beyond the letter of the law. Yisroel himself was telling Moshe, tell the people there is law, and it's beyond the letter of the law. And that's how that should be your approach to when you're dealing with going to a Beis Din. There's both. There's the law, and there's beyond the letter of the law. Yisroel was already told Moshe at the start, this is what you need to impress upon the Jewish people. There's a Gemara in the Gemara Baba Metzia says that Yerushalayim would not have been destroyed if, actually the Gemara I believe says Yerushalayim was destroyed because Hamidu Divrayim Al Hadin, because they established all their words on judgment, on justice. What's wrong with that? The answer is, the Gemara means to say that they always worked with the letter of the law instead of going beyond the letter of the law. And that was one of the causes of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, the point here is that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he said Eicha, he was already bemoaning, he was already lamenting the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, whose roots were in this episode. In this episode of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu has to create a court system. And Moshe Rabbeinu bemoans, Eicha, how do I carry your contentiousness alone? Moshe Rabbeinu is already bemoaning the roots of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And the root of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash was Tarchachem, your contentiousness. The fact that when you come to a Beis Din, you just never, never want to give in. If that is what your approach is, you never want to give in. You only want to be victorious. You're never going to want to compromise and work things out. That is the root of sin and chinam. That's the root of the hatred that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash.
So,
okay.
Clearly, well, we are told if we believe something and we think it's right that we should not just give up and let people do the wrong thing.
No. So, first of all, the discussion here now is in a monetary dispute.
Oh, all right.
That's the issue here. We're not talking about compromising principles and compromising morals, no. We're talking about, here you're dealing with Beis Din. You're dealing with, like Rashi says, they're in a court case. They're arguing a court case. Two people. It's a monetary issue.
Beis Din handles other things besides
But that's not the Tarchachem. The Tarchachem that Moshe Rabbeinu was complaining about was the way that the people, when they're at what we call a Din Torah, they have a monetary dispute, or a dispute, and they're settling dispute in Beis Din, the behavior that they showed them.
Should add to it. I absolutely agree. My wife, she's an architect, and to deal with neighbors without a compromise is even ridiculous to think about. So you definitely need, give and take.
Right.
Right, but you can't compromise fundamental principles.
That's not the discussion here.
Right, okay.
This is really, the discussion really is really interaction between people.
Okay.
That's what it's about. Okay. Let's now move on to where Moshe Rabbeinu discusses, or actually reviews, the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies. It's on page 944. Let's start from the top of the page, Pasuk Chav. V'oimar aleichem, and I said to you, V'asem ad har ha-amori, you have come up to the mount of the Amori, Asher Hashem alakech, and it's in London that Hashem our God has given us. Hashem is giving us. Re'ei nasan Hashem alakech alafanach ha-sa'aretz. Behold, Hashem has given before you the land. Alei reish, go and take over. Ka'asher dibar Hashem alakech ha-sech alach, as Hashem, the God of your fathers, has spoken to you, Al tira v'al teichas. Do not fear, do not lose resolve. V'tikav v'alai kolchem. And you all approached me, v'atomru, and you said, Nishloch anashim lefaneinu, let us send out people in front of us. V'yachperu lanu v'sa'aretz, and they shall spy out the land for us. V'yashivu esenu davar, they shall bring back to us a report. Esaderach ha-shanaliba, the path upon which we will go up. V'yisa'arim ha-shanavai aleihen, and the cities that we should first come upon them in war. The matter was good in my eyes. And I took from you 12 men, one man per tribe. And we know the rest of the story that Moshe Rabbeinu repeats about the Jewish people, how they sinned by the spies. Now, Rashi has a famous comment on the words, the top Rashi, you all approached me. Listen to me, you all approached me. So Rashi is berbuvia, in confusion. And then there's a different time where it says the heads of your tribes and your elders approached, and you said, that approach was appropriate. That's talking about after the Torah was given, after Hashem gave the Aseret HaDibros, So it says that the elders approached Moshe to say, you know, we can't keep dealing with hearing Hashem's voice. So there it says that who approached? All the heads of your tribes and your elders, and you said, Oisa kreva haisa haigenet. That approach was appropriate. The way you approached me then, that was appropriate. The young ones honor the elders and sent the elders before them to approach. The elders show respect to the heads to go before them. But here it's you all came before me in confusion. The young ones pushing ahead of the elders pushing ahead of the ones at the head. When the Jewish people came, it was with a complete lack of derech eretz. The whole approach of asking for the spies was done in an inappropriate way. It was done without respect. It was just done in confusion. It started off in the wrong way. The question is, why is this important to mention? Why is this important to mention here when Moshe Rabbeinu is rebuking the Jewish people or reminding them of that past sin and what they have to learn from it? Why is it so important for Moshe Rabbeinu to mention this? Okay, yeah, clearly it was a lack of derech eretz, but in the bigger picture, it doesn't seem to make a big difference. The bigger issue was the fact that the Jewish people gave up their trust in Hashem. Why is it necessary to mention with this issue of not being very orderly or respectful? So the Hamikdavar, in the Tziv, brings out an explanation from Yibitzo Volozhiner, and he says like this, that actually this piece of rebuke about the lack of derech eretz was actually an important part of the rebuke to the Jewish people about the sin of the spies. And basically his point is like this. The Ramban, you know, there's a whole discussion about was it wrong to send the spies, not wrong to send the spies. So the Ramban says essentially it was not wrong to send the spies. There was nothing wrong with them doing what is typically done before war, which is send out spies to be able to create a strategy of how to conquer the land. There was nothing wrong with that. But it got out of hand. So the way that Ritzel Volozhiner explains it is like this. People might say, like the Ramban, that, you know, things started off okay. Just kind of went sour later. But at the beginning, we were okay. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, if at the beginning you were okay, and if essentially this is a proper thing to do, I'm going to say that this is not working exactly with the Ramban, but using the Ramban for this explanation. If at the beginning things were okay, meaning if in essence this was a good plan, but people basically took this and corrupted it, then it should have started off smooth. Good things go good. Bad things go bad from the beginning. Something that's good would start off good. If this whole request was appropriate, then it would have started off, the request itself would have made an appropriate way. But if the request or this, if the issue at hand is essentially wrong, then basically it's going to start off wrong. If essentially this thing is wrong, the evil of it will already start influencing at the outset. At the outset it's going to start. The Yetzer Hara is getting involved in this plan, and from the beginning the Yetzer Hara is going to be involved and show and getting you to behave in an appropriate manner. And you should have realized that. That's the point. The point is that when you saw this confusion and this lack of derech eretz, you should have realized something's wrong here. Because if we're already starting off in a bad way, then that means this is a bad thing. Because a bad thing already has its influence on us from the start. That's the point, he says. The point, according to Rashi, according to his explanation, that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them about your lack of derech eretz. You're all pushing ahead. Why is that so important to mention here? Because it's actually the beginning of the rebuke. You should have realized something was wrong here. Because when it started off wrong, you should have realized it was wrong. Because if it was right, it would have started off right. Interesting idea. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Vayitav einai adavar." The matter was good in my eyes. So let's take a look at Rashi. This is Rashi in Pasuk Chaf Gimel. "Vayitav einai adavar." The matter was good in my eyes. Rashi towards the middle of the column in the right. Moshe Rabbeinu says it was good in my eyes, be'enai v'be'enai hamakim. It was good in my eyes, not in Hashem's eyes. V'me'enai Moshe hayatov l'mer v'teichachis. All right. If at the end of the day, if Moshe Rabbeinu seemingly got it wrong, right? So then it's not a rebuke on the Jewish people, it's a rebuke on him. And Rashi understands that this is all part of the rebuke on the people. Masha la'adam shem la'chaveri. So we can compare this to a person who says to his friend, Machali chamar chazeh, sell me this donkey. Amar lehein, he says, sure. Nosna atalina desayin? You let me have a test drive? Amar lehein, he says, sure. Bahar Megvais, mountains and hills. I'm really hanging, sure. Kevin Sharaya Shainam Akle Klum. He sees that the seller is not holding back anything. Let him do anything he wants. Amar Lakeh Palibai, the buyer says to himself, Batua Khuzesh Layam Sabaimum. The guy is sure I'm not going to find anything wrong. Because if he knows there's something wrong and he's trying to trick me, he wouldn't let me do all these things. Miyad Amaroi, Tuma Iska. So the buyer says, okay, here's the money. I'm not bothering testing it. Okay? It's kind of a common thing. Af ani haidisi l'derechem. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, when you came and you asked me, I should have said no. But you know why he said yes? Because I figured, I hoped, Shema tachzeru b'chem k'shetiru she'eni ma'akev. I thought that when you saw that I wasn't going to hold back, that you'd change your mind. V'atem l'chazatem b'chem, and you didn't. So Moshe Rabbeinu saying it was good in my eyes is part of the rebuke on the Jewish people, because if I let you do it, then you should have realized that there's nothing wrong. Okay. So I'm going to go a little bit off the subject, a little bit tangential here, where you know, Rashi uses this mashal about the buyer and the seller, where the buyer is, you know, can I have a test drive? The seller says, sure. Okay. So halachically, you know, in transactions, how does this relate in a practical way? This whole mashal that Rashi gives about, you know, asking for a test drive, not for a test drive. You know, how does it relate in a practical halachic way in a transaction? So here again, from the Beis Avad, a very interesting discussion about what's called mekach tois, mistaken purchases. Typically in civil law, we have a rule, or at least the starting point is buyer beware, right? When you go out and you buy something, you have to be aware of the faults that it may have in it, okay? And unless you go ahead and you ask for a warranty, or unless the seller is actively hiding something wrong or misrepresenting things, which is fraud, it's buyer beware. It's upon you to beware. And, you know, nowadays, in a lot of, you know, I think in Massachusetts we have the Lemon Law, yep. Right? The Lemon Law basically says that, you know, in this point of time, there's just too much going on for a buyer to say to the buyer, it's your responsibility to figure everything out. Even, you know, there's a point where it's just too much. You know, it's not like in the old days. Things are much more complicated. There's much more things that you have to trust the seller about. And therefore, there have been laws called the Lemon Laws that say, you know, no, under certain circumstances, it's the responsibility of the seller, not the buyer. But again, that needs to be enacted. That needs to be, you know, enacted. If it's not enacted or if it's not applied, then it's buyer beware. And halacha gives the advantage to the buyer. Halacha really says that if I buy something, and I find something wrong with it, and what I find again is something that typically anybody, if they know about it in the beginning, would never have bought it, then the person, the buyer, can claim mekach tois, it was a mistake, and he can demand full payment back. It's not a punishment for the guy selling him something wrong. It's not a punishment. But rather, halacha says that the buyer does not have to accept damaged goods. I don't buy damaged goods. I don't have to buy damaged goods. That is my right. I don't buy damaged goods. And therefore, if you sell me damaged goods, I can say it's a mistake. Now again, excuse me?
It's Lemon Law.
The Lemon Law. But again, I think the Lemon Law, if again, Halacha doesn't need a lemon law. You know, Halacha says that's the starting point, right? That's the starting point. And probably Halacha, again, I can't tell you all the rules of the lemon law, but, you know, it's possible that Halacha has more leeway to claiming that the Mekach type's a mistake than maybe common law. But I don't know all the rules in that. And now again, it doesn't mean that you can be flippant and say, you make up some kind of mishigas that you have, and if I would have known, I wouldn't have bought it. You know, if it's not something normal, it's not something normal. Then when you bought it, there was no reason, you didn't even have a right to say that, because when you bought it, then it's regular and it's fine, and no one have any problems with it, then we say, that's your das also, that's your intention also. But again, there is this, Halacha gives the upper hand to the buyer in the sense that the buyer, if it's something that, you know, people would mind, you don't say to him, well, you should have checked it out. No, I don't have to buy damaged goods. How about, what's the halacha though? If, let's say, you had a chance to test drive, right? He gave you a chance to test drive, and you didn't take it. You had a chance to check it out, and you said, no, I don't have to check it out. So what happens then? Maybe, is that considered like a official declaration that says, I'm taking it whatever it is.
As is.
Whatever may be. Does it mean that? So it's interesting that there is the opinion of the Magid Mishnah that says that if the buyer was able to test or taste, like, you know, you're buying some food, right? If you're able to do something, if you were able to test or taste the merchandise, and you didn't do so, then you can't go ahead and say Mekach Tais. Because if you had a chance to test it out, and you didn't test it out, that's considered as if you are saying, as if you are openly agreeing that I take it as is. That's the mechanism that says. Again, I had a chance to test it, which means you were offered, I'm assuming it means you were offered a chance to test it. You were offered a chance to taste it, okay? And you gave it, and you let it go, you didn't take it up. The Magid Mishnah says, you can't come back and say, this is horrible, you know? Mekach Tais, never would have bought it, you never would have bought it. What do you mean never would have bought it? You had a chance to taste it, and you didn't. That's a sign that you agreed to take it, as is. Now, even according to the Magid Mishnah, there are limitations to this. Number one, let's say you had a chance to test drive it, but the reason you didn't, it was because the seller said it's fine. I mean, you relied on the seller.
But he says fine, it doesn't say it's good.
Excuse me?
He says fine though, which is already a word that's not so strong.
Whatever it may be.
Yeah.
If the point is that the reason I didn't take the test is because I relied on you, I relied on your words, then you can't hold it against me that I didn't take the test. Not taking the test when I could is not an agreement if I was relying on your words. That's number one. Number two, if I don't test it, then that is a sign that I am agreeing to take this as much as testing it would have done. Or at least something predictable, you know? Something predictable. But something that's unpredictable, right? That, there's nothing in waiving the test that would say something unpredictable, I let it go also. And a third limitation that's mentioned here is that if I didn't hand you the money yet, there's no agreement. My understanding of that is that even if, let's say, we made a kinyan, right? We made a kinyan, we made an act of requisition. Now it's a question of paying. Until I pay, even though I passed up on test driving it, until I pay, we do not know of any agreement, we don't see any agreement yet that says that I'm taking it no matter what. Okay? That's if you follow the opinion of the Magid Mishnah. There are those who disagree with the Magid Mishnah and say that even if I had a chance to test drive it, and I didn't, it's not a sign. It's not a sign that I'm letting it go. The facts are, I don't have to buy damaged merchandise, And that principle is the overriding principle in anything that happens. So, at the same time though, practically speaking, right, it's a lot smarter to test it than to buy it and then go back to the guy and say, it was a mistake, give me back my money. Okay. Practically speaking, it makes sense to do that. And therefore, one could say, well, therefore, when even the Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Jewish people, you know, go test it, practically speaking, the smart way to go would be to test it, right? Mm-hmm. Why are you taking chances? The answer is, if the Rabbeinu Shalom tells you it's okay, there's a different story. Yeah. There's a different ballgame. And that was where Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, that was your mistake, and that's why what was good in my eyes, right, is part of the rebuke. Because I was hoping you'd get the point from it, and it didn't happen. Okay, now, I'm going to try to fit in this next thing in the amount of time that we have left. So the Medrash says the beginning of the parasha. Okay. Eila Hadavarim. These are the words that Moshe said. Amar Rav Acha Rav Chanina. Re'uyas hayu ateichachais loimar mi pibilam. The rebuke in the book of Devarim that's given over to the Jewish people, that was said to the Jewish people by Moshe, you know who should have said it? Bilam. The commentary of Eitz Yosef says that techachas, the rebuke mentioned here, means the klalas. In Parshas Kisavei, mm-hmm. where the curses are mentioned, are the whole list of curses that are before the Jewish people if they abandon Hashem, the Teichacha as we referred to it, Bilam should have said it. The Habrachis and the blessings, which blessings? Bilam's blessings. Mipi Moshe. Moshe should have said it. You know, your friend gives you blessings and your enemy gives you curses. Ella, Elo Hechich and Bilam, if Bilam would have rebuked them, Ha Yisrael Aimim Seinim Eichichenu. The Jewish people would have said, Bilam is rebuking us, Bilam is cursing us. We should believe it. He's probably making it up. The Elo Barcha Moshe, and if Moshe would have blessed them, Ha Yu Umas Aimim Aimim Ayavan Berachan. The nation of the world would have said, Moshe blessed them. Like, yeah, you know, big deal. I mean, he's their friend. He loves them. He's their leader. I mean, you know, does it really mean to? You're gonna tell me Hashem said it? Nah, Hashem didn't say it. Moshe Rabbeinu said it. Therefore, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Yerchich and Moshe Shoyavan. Baruch Shalom said, Let Moshe who loves them rebuke them. The Yivarch and Bilam Shesainan, and Bilam who hates them, let him bless them. Kadosh Shiyisvara Brachas Vatechachas B'Ad Yisrael. That should be very clear. The blessings and the rebuke should be clear by the Jewish people and by the world, you know, what's going on here, meaning it's coming from Hashem. That's the way the commentary of Eitz Yosef explains this medrash, and that would seemingly be the simple explanation. Now, the Shem Shmuel, I read a sefer called the Kutim Sefer Shem Shmuel, selections from the Sefer Shem Shmuel, and he says that it's a little bit problematic to just take the Medrash like that, because he argues that if Bilam would have given them the brachas, the klalas, I'm sorry, if Bilam would have given them the curses, meaning the curses of the Torah, not his own curses, okay, he would have given them the teichacha, okay, the Shem Shmuel says, don't you think people would realize it's coming as a prophecy? If Bilam would say the Teichacha from the Torah, we're giving him to say it? He's going to say it? You got to be kidding. You're letting him give the curse to the Jewish people? That was the whole point that happened when Balak tried to hide him. Hashem didn't let him do it. And he brings down a Zayar, very interesting Zayar. The Zayar says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Bilam, you wicked man, you think that the blessings for my children or otherwise will be through your auspices. They don't need you at all. Rather, return to Balak, and when you open your mouth, it will not be under your control, and the matter is not dependent upon you. Rather, thus shall you speak. This thus, which is referring to the Shekhinah, the divine presence of Hashem, is ready to bless them. Thus will utter the blessing of my children, for when you open your mouth, it will speak the matters which will apply to my children, and you won't help at all. The whole point was that Hashem said to Bilam, you're not saying a word here. This is not from you. You're going to say what I tell you to say. So therefore, if Bilam would have given these, the Teichacha, would have said the curses at the end of Devarim, what do you think? Wouldn't it have been as an act of prophecy? It would have been the same way how it was clear that Hashem made Bilam say what he said to Balak, that here too he'd be saying what Hashem wants him to say? So there shouldn't be a question of what would come from Hashem. And if Moshe is giving them the blessings, this Moshe Rabbeinu talking. Shechina medaberes mitarech kreinai. The Shechina speaks from Moshe Rabbeinu's mouth. Even in the Varim it says Hashem Yishmuel. There's some more human input, but he follows the approach that it's still Shechina medaberes. The Shechina is still speaking from Moshe. So it's clear it's from Hashem. So what does the Medrash mean? So he says like this. So this is, again, my understanding of it. He says that clearly, even if Bilam is the one that is saying a prophecy, and Moshe Rabbeinu was saying a prophecy, but again, the Medrash says it should have been that Bilam curses and Moshe should have given the blessings, because it just makes sense. That makes sense if it's their blessing, right? That makes sense if it's their blessing. So therefore, the Shema Shmuel is saying that even if it's going to be clear that what Bilam is going to say is a prophecy, what Moshe is going to say is a prophecy, but again, it's their blessing, it's their curse, to which Hashem is going to agree to, that's so to say, right? But it's their blessing. It's their curse. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to agree to it. Okay. So if Bilam is approaching the Jewish people. Okay? So Bilam's gonna curse the Jewish people. Bilam does not like the Jewish people. That's very clear. The Rebbeinu Shalom had to take all his curses and turn them into blessings, because Bilam had no intention to bless the Jewish people. So even if Bilam now is going to be forced to have to do what he did before, and he has to say the rebuke of Hashem's rebuke to the Jewish people, but he's doing it with his perception of the Jewish people. He's looking at the Jewish people, and he's looking at them in the most negative way possible. He is looking at them in their lowest of the low. And it's with that look that he has, that perception of the Jewish people that he has, that he only owes the curse. But again, it's going to have to be the curse that Hashem puts. So when that happens, the Jewish people look at this curse and they say, you know, Bilam is cursing us. Bilam hates us. Bilam is prejudiced against us. So when he curses us, you know, that's not us. He's cursing this people that he's making into the lowest of the low. That's not us. It's not relevant to us, these curses. It's not relevant. This is what the Jewish people could say. And therefore, Bilam can't do the cursing. He can't do the cursing because in essence, Bilam is cursing the Jewish people at a level where the Jewish people can say, it's not relevant to us. Moshe Rabbeinu blesses the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest lover of the Jewish people. If Moshe Rabbeinu is going to give them a blessing, he's going to look at them in the best way possible. He's going to bring out their milas, their advantages at the highest level, and with that bless them. So the nations of what they're going to say, Moshe is biased. He's giving them these blessings, and the blessings are based on all these advantages of the Jewish people. It's not true. They don't exist. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu switches it around. Bilam is going to bless the Jewish people with all the hatred that he has and his negative that he looks at them, he's still blessing them. That means that the blessing of the Jewish people affects them even in the lowest state, even when they're not in a good situation. And when Moshe Rabbeinu now, who loves them and always looks at the best in them, rebukes them, he's rebuking them even when they're in their best point. The clawless, the curses of the Torah are meant even to tell righteous people, look what could happen. Look what could happen if things go wrong. It's a rebuke for the Jewish people at all levels. And that is what happens when Moshe Rabbeinu gives the rebuke. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is still seeing the Jewish people and all their advantages, and he's still rebuking them. So the rebuke applies in all situations. Right?